Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History 2, with my partner, Rosalind Wine, and we are interviewing Elaine Light. Elaine, would you give us your address, please?
Apartment 9C, Chatham Tower, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. Today's date is June 9th, 1992.
Elaine, could you tell us a little bit about your background, your parents, any siblings, and just where you were born?
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because my mother wanted to go to a woman doctor, Dr. Anna Stanton. And so I possibly was one of the first babies born at McGee Hospital. Although we lived in Kent, Ohio at the time, where my father was in the clothing business.
All right. How long did you live there?
I lived in Kent, Ohio until I was approximately 7 years old, when, because of financial reverses, my father and mother came to Pittsburgh, and we lived with her mother, her widowed mother, and her, I think at this point, six or seven sisters.
My grandmother.
Mm-hmm. So it was a very large family with lots of aunts and uncles and cousins on Farragut Street in East End near Highland Park.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you tell us anything about school life at that point?
Well, I went to the Dilworth School, and I went there. Apparently there were no junior high schools in those days. We went to school until it was the eighth grade, and then I went to Peabody High School. I graduated in 3.5 years and started at the University of Pittsburgh in February of, I would think, 1940. And under the accelerated wartime program, I could have graduated in 3 years, but I had been offered the chance to be sports editor of the Pitt News, which at that time was nearest and dearest to my heart. And so I stayed an extra 6 months, taking approximately one course. So I graduated then in February of 1944. And there again, having been extremely fortunate to always be in the right place at the right time, I actually was able to write sports, and I went with the Associated Press 2 months after, no, 1 month after my graduation. And I was with them for approximately 6.5 years until they made the mistake of sending me to Punxsutawney to cover a story. And there I met my husband. And I spent the next 33 years pretty much there until he died in 1983. And at that point, we had had an apartment in Pittsburgh for 5 or 6 years. And I had always more or less kept one foot in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I had always kept up my professional contact. And I always, it was just a question really of where I felt I could do the most, or what I would be kept the most active doing, or where I chose to stay. And although I think in my heart I always knew that I would return to Pittsburgh.
Well, did you participate in sports as a youngster?
I despised athletics. I still do. But there's a difference between spectator sports and participating in sports.
Okay.
I am a reporter. I am not a participant.
Well, then you must have known Marv Bloom in that capacity.
Yes, that's in that capacity.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Did you have religious training?
My grandmother was very Orthodox, mm-hmm. I would say, although she belonged to B'nai Israel, and I did go to Sunday school. I did not enjoy it. It was a very long, cold walk from Farragut Street to, where was it, Negley Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very relieved, I think. I do not know at what age that I gave up, or it gave up on me.
You didn't stay till confirmation?
No. Yeah. Although my brother did have a bar mitzvah. And I just have one brother who is 3.5 years younger and who is head of the Department of Clinical Psychology at the University of Arizona, Tucson.
Oh.
I have no relatives left in Pittsburgh. I have that huge family. It was a
really
large family. I am the sole survivor here in Pittsburgh. The cousins that are left, that lived in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
there are three who are now living in the San Francisco area.
Oh.
I have one daughter now in the San Francisco area and one daughter in Washington, D.C. Three cousins, one of whom is in a nursing home in Cleveland, Ohio, on my father's side, and then an assortment of cousins around the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you still friendly with people you went to school with?
I still have the friends that I made in first grade.
Really?
And I'm extremely close to them. I also am happy to say that I have the friends that I made in not so much high school. It seems to me that high school was simply a place that I went to after Dilworth. But I still have friends from my college days, and particularly from my days in Punxsutawney, which was very nice because that included a whole
mm-hmm.
Western Pennsylvania.
Right.
It included DuBois, Indiana, Brookville.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. My children were all, two of them were born in Brookville Hospital. Let me see here. Any teachers that you were still friendly with?
Well, they're all dead now, but yes, I was always much closer. In fact, I was always very old for my age, and I don't know, I always said that I never had anything in common with anybody unless they were 50. And until I became close to 70, and now I find I still relate to people 50. It's really very nice. I'm stuck on a certain note.
Oh, that's interesting.
My husband was 26 years older than
oh,
I was,
really?
So I had friends who were much older.
Uh-huh.
And I recall an aunt saying to me that I was 100 years old when I was born, so
oh,
I suppose I was.
You're a little bit older. How did you enjoy your life? In
I think I've had an absolutely wonderful life. I have been very fortunate. I always went after something that seemed to be, I guess, impossible. And I was thinking last night, like wanting to be a sports writer when no woman had ever been a sports
mm-hmm.
writer. It seemed to me that I achieved it without any effort. I mean, it just kind of came to me. Fortunately, there again, I no matter what you do in this life, you have to be in the right place at the right time. You have the right talents or whatever people are looking for at that time. You're very lucky.
Well, did you do this when you were in Punxsutawney, too?
I didn't do sports, no. Cooking came out of the result that I was not very interested. I'm not a joiner, and I don't like organizations. But I like to, I guess, work on projects.
Uh-huh.
And so, there again, because I was literally a reporter stuck with one story, and that story turned out to be the groundhog.
Mm-hmm. Was that already going on when you got there?
Oh, yes. And 2 years after I married my husband, he became president of the Groundhog Club.
How long had it been?
Oh, the Groundhog Club was 103 years old.
Oh, is it really?
The actual official thing. And so it was a story, and it became a much bigger one during
mm-hmm.
my husband's tenure because, first of all, I think he was president for longer than anyone else, 26 years.
Okay.
It was a time in which television came into its own,
mm-hmm.
and so it became something actually real, something people could see, and although it had for a long time been a media event, there's no question about that, the newspapers had covered it for year after year
mm-hmm.
after year. And so, because I was more or less stuck with it, and I did ignore, this is in a way you're letting me do two stories in one, because Punxsutawney is doing a book on the history of the groundhog, and I was asked to do the piece on me.
They're doing it now.
Yeah, because there is a movie coming out in approximately Christmas with Bill Murray of Saturday Live fame called Groundhog Day. And in some ways it is considered, although it wasn't intended as such, and I'm sure that Bill Murray doesn't regard it as such, but there are parallels to my own and being kind of my life story, because it is the story of a weatherman from Pittsburgh who is sent to Punxsutawney to cover a story that he does not care for very much and is very cynical about. And during the course of being forced to spend his time reliving Groundhog Day, day after day, he gradually comes not only to love the story, but apparently to become lovable himself and marries a girl. Now, I'm not quite clear on this. I don't think the girl's in Punxsutawney, but as I really have not seen the script. But basically, this has recalled the way in which I came to Punxsutawney
uh-huh.
and the fact that I met their most eligible bachelor on the course of although the story I went to cover did not have anything to do with Groundhog Day, strangely enough, it had to do with another movie that was done about Punxsutawney back in 1950, a little movie called When Willie Comes Marching Home, which had been deliberately mislaid in a place called Punxsutawney, West Virginia.
Oh.
And because it was deliberately mislaid, this resulted in a lot of publicity for the real Punxsutawney, of which there is only one in the world.
Right.
With the result that the little movie star named Colleen Townsend, who had announced that she was renouncing her career to follow God, was invited by the minister of the Presbyterian Church in Punxsutawney to come to Punxsutawney during the course of, a big Hollywood premiere of this misplaced movie and tell the world why she was giving up her career for God. And so I was sent as a cynical, non-believing reporter from Punxsutawney to cover this story of Colleen Townsend. It was very interesting because she was for real, and she married the son of the minister who had interested her in that particular... That's her.
Go ahead.
All
right. Watch yourself.
Whoop.
Hello. Okay, is that Marilyn? Have you met Marilyn? So,
I met her a long time ago. Be careful here.
Okay.
I met her through Sylvia.
Oh.
Sachs.
Get this stuff in
there. You edit this all out.
Mm-hmm. But we'll take it from there. It's just so it tastes sweet and like have it clear.
Well, I don't know. You're not
whatever. No, it's going to be edited.
Yeah, no, this
you
is
want
good.
This?
I want you to know something. You may have a copy of this when we're all finished with the set of it.
Oh, good. I'll give it to the kids.
Yeah.
I
think it's very nice to do dogs.
You're talking about this movie. That was 1950s.
1950. And it was February 5th, 1950. Groundhog Day had been February 2nd, 1950.
Oh.
So it was after Groundhog Day.
It was
but during the course of the...
Watch again.
Oh, yeah,
I don't want you falling. Herb's retired, you know. Hi, we've met before. Madeline Topper, I don't know if you remember me. Hi. Rosalind Wine.
Hello.
How are you?
The tape out because we're still running. Yes, she always does. Get your questions ready in advance.
That I don't have. I mean, I didn't.
Well, take a look at the thing and call the thread. She missed these.
Yeah, she still doesn't know. She's
going to
call me.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the things that I could see that you missed.
Okay, call me.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you both.
Bye-bye.
Can't you get those newspapers working?
Oh,
no. Aww.
I'm doing my
part. Good.
Shall I ask you before? Or maybe you could see now.
Oh, for goodness sake, you don't have to serve us.
Thank you.
Very kind of you, Elijah. Be careful, please. As I said before, Herb is retired. He doesn't want any more business right now. This is an orthopedist, so don't fall.
Oh, okay. No, and I don't want to. Oh, I did that last year. I don't want to.
Oh, yeah, you did that already.
Yeah, I've already
done
that.
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
Okay, you were talking about the movie. Did you want to go on a little bit more about that?
Well, I think we covered that.
Okay. I want to go back to just one thing. Your brother's name.
Marvin.
Marvin. And your maiden name?
Con.
Okay. Okay. Now,
since you're doing an oral history, there's only one thing I want to clear up.
Sure.
One part of the record that has always bothered me: when I went to school, or when I went to Peabody High School, there were only two cons. The other girl graduated with summer school credits. And I graduated high honor. And they put the asterisk in front of the wrong name. So if anybody goes to the record, I would like to have it on the record. It's very nice to be able to clear something up.
Well, sure.
That I did not graduate with summer school. I graduated with high honors.
High honors.
So.
It will be for posterity.
Okay. Now, just to get back a little bit, you're going to maybe be jumping around a little bit. When you got to Punxsie, how did you meet Sam?
Well, that also is a very convoluted story. It was a two-day weekend, and I had gone up with the Warner Brothers party. That's right. And I was to return with my photographer, who was coming Sunday morning for the church service. But believe it or not, this story, and I might add that the reason this story was important was because Ingrid Bergman had just had her baby out of wedlock. Mm-hmm. And somewhat like poor Murphy Brown, she had become the subject of great controversy.
Mm-hmm.
And along comes this little movie starlet who announces that she is willing to give up her career for her belief in God. And it was the antidote to all of this bad publicity that Hollywood was getting about the immorality of its stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very odd to me. Every time I see beautiful, what's her name, Isabella Rossellini,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if it were not for your mother, I would never have gotten to Punxsutawney. I would never have met my husband. I would never have had the life that I had. So if Ingrid Bergman, in far off, whatever, the Stromboli, had not had her love affair with Roberta Rossellini, Elaine Kahn would never have been in Punxsutawney, because nobody would have given a single thought about a little dumb movie called When Willie Comes Marching Home, which was about a serviceman who was given a great send-off by his peers or his friends in Punxsutawney and wound up stationed right next to his hometown. So that was the whole premise of this comic movie.
Is that interesting? So you met, anyhow, you met Sam that weekend.
Well, I met him in the weekend because the family that housed Colleen had a brunch for her following the church service. I had been invited to it, but I had declined, believing that I had to go back to Pittsburgh with my photographer. But it was such a great story, believe it or not. It was an A-Wire story, which is the top news wire, that my editor in those days, before fax machines and the like, wanted me to stay in Punxsutawney and write the story and phone it in rather than take the time to drive the 2 hours back to Pittsburgh and write it in Pittsburgh and then get it on the wire, with the result that I was able to go to the luncheon and had managed to beg a ride with a Sun Telegraph photographer who was going back later and talked them into going to the luncheon. And in the course of the luncheon, I met Sam Light with Dr. Frank Lorenzo, who was the president of the Groundhog Club at the time. And that's how it all began. And he came to Pittsburgh 3 months later and took me to dinner. And he came every week for 6 weeks until somewhere about the middle of June. And one night we were about to go out for dinner, and he said, "Sit down, I would like to talk with you." And he made a very nice little preamble. And he said, "I hope I'm not being presumptuous." And he brought out a pocket full of diamonds. And I looked at the diamonds, and they were all rose-cut stones. And since I'm a woman who always knew what she wanted, the only thing I could think of to say was, I always thought if I ever had a diamond, I would like an emerald cut. And, of course, he was a coal operator. He did diamond core drilling for coal, and the diamond salesman who sold the industrial diamonds, he had told him he was interested in a gemstone, and so the salesman had given him a whole pocket full of packets, of course, of stones. And so my husband-to-be said, well, he didn't know, he had been told this was the most popular, but he would come in the next week, and we went to Hardy and Hayes, and we bought the stones I'm still wearing.
It's so romantic.
So that was it.
Very romantic.
And then he came you know, he said, well, no, where would you like to go on your honeymoon? And I said, well, I think I'd like to go to Hawaii, because Clark Gable and his then wife had just gone to Hawaii.
Okay.
So he said that was fine. He had some friends who did. He was a bird dog man. His hobbies were dogs, and I did know about them because I had written, reluctantly, those stories for the AP, because the Punxsutawney paper had requested information about these various field trials in which the dogs participated. So I was familiar with who he was and what he was. And so we were married on the 23rd of September in 1950. We did go to Hawaii, and he did judge a field trial there, with the result that it did give us entree to all segments of Hawaiian life. We were entertained by the haole, the descendants of the missionaries, the people who owned the islands. We made wonderful Chinese friends who were there and had bird dogs and Japanese friends. In fact, I talked to one when I was in Hawaii recently, and Mrs. Lyons, who was the widow of the man who, she was a Baldwin, one of the five families of Hawaii, we stayed with them various times, and they visited us because they were very interested. Admiral Lyons introduced Sam's dogs on the islands. They were very famous, this strain of English setter dogs.
Sam's dogs?
Yeah. The Samuel strain of English setters, which were bird dogs. They were dogs primarily for hunting or flushing quail and grouse here in Pennsylvania woodpile.
Did you have those in Punxsutawney?
When we were married, he had 169 dogs, but they were with, fortunately, dog trainers. We did not have house dogs except during hunting season, and then they were kept outside.
They were trainers.
I was not a sporting woman, as I told him from the very beginning, so.
How long were you in Hawaii at that time?
We spent a month in all. We were married in New York and flew to San Francisco. We spent some time there, and then we were in Hawaii and all three islands, and then we were in, I think, L.A. coming home.
Well, then you started your life in a small town?
Yeah, and it was very lonesome, and I didn't have anything to do. The highlight of the week was my Tuesday appointment at the hairdresser's, of course. And there were only two hairdressers in town at that time, and you really had to get your name in somebody. It was kind of funny. You had to have someone die so you could get their appointment. So when I got Tuesday, that was a very bad day. That was for a beginner. that literally, I think, was my introduction. But there was wonderful Dr. Lorenzo, who was absolutely incredible. He was the president of the Groundhog Club at that time. He was a very worldly orthopedic surgeon, by the way. He invented a screw that I think maybe the patent just ran out, that was used for healing hips and what have you. And he was just a delight. He was a great host. He had been my husband's preceptor. He had taught him how to shoot. He was just, he was flamboyant. He was exciting. He was just wonderful.
Did he have family? Was he married?
He was married. He had also had a mistress who lived with him in his camp, Brunny, whom he called. Her name was Eileen, I believe, but he called her Brunhilde. She was very plain. He did not permit her to wear makeup. He did not want her to be attractive to any other man. She was a nurse, and he had literally, I guess, seduced her when she went into nursing school. She may have been 17 or 18 years old, and she never could break away from him. And it's a very interesting story, because 2 years later, 3 weeks before my first child was born, and her name, by the way, is Melanie Laurie for Lorenzo, because I just adored him. He made my life supportable during those 2 years. He died of a massive heart attack on Decoration Day morning. Ronnie, meanwhile, had never really gotten anything from him through all those years, and she had a little insurance policy that he had made out to his grandchildren, but finally she was able to break that, and she got it. And she left Punxsutawney, and she went to right outside of Washington, D.C., and she bought a motel, or got into a motel there. Her mother was there, and seemed to be working very well, and I think she was building a new life for herself. She was young. She was still maybe only in her 40s. And one day she was taking her maid home from work, and she was stopped at a stop sign, and a man came through and struck her, and she was killed instantly. The maid wasn't hurt. But the thing about the story that makes you really wonder is that presumably the reason that Doc never gave her anything or never left her anything, he bought his wife Mary a mink coat. Brunny got the little mink thing to wear around your neck, the skins. Usually it's the other way around, but that's not how it worked there. And it's most interesting that she always said that the reason he didn't leave her anything was he didn't think she could live without him, and that whether he expected her to kill herself or whatever it was, I don't know. But the man who struck her from behind, his name Lorenzo something or other, was his first name. It was the eeriest thing that you could possibly imagine.
Oh my.
And so there were
eerie.
Great stories, you know. That,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, he's grateful.
Wonderful. So your daughter was born after...
3 weeks later.
3 weeks later, after you were there 2 years.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. She was born in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie, Glory.
And your life was a little busier, I'm sure.
Yes, of course, we had a housekeeper who had been with my husband, or with his parents for a number of years. In fact, Helen, I think, had gone to work for his mother when she was 14 years old.
Well, you had family there when you came there, Pungsi, your husband's?
No, his family, his brother was there. He was his associate in business.
Oh. What was his
brother,
name?
Oscar. And he lived at the family had taken over it was during the war years, I believe, and they couldn't build a new house. They wanted to build a place where the family could gather, and
mm-hmm.
so they had taken this farmhouse and had redone it because under whatever the wartime restrictions were, you couldn't build anew, but you could remodel.
Oh.
So they had done that, and Oscar had moved in there, and he lived there.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 5 miles into the country.
Okay. So your daughter, what was your daughter's name?
Melanie Laurie. Hello, Laurie.
Melanie Laurie.
Uh-huh. And then 2 years later, we had Meredith in the R-E-D-I-T-H.
Meredith?
Ann.
Mm-hmm. And they attended school in Punxsutawney?
Yeah, they went to Punxsutawney until they were about 15. And
mm-hmm.
Melanie went to Moravian Academy in Bethlehem, PA.
Mm-hmm.
And Meredith went to Our Lady of Mercy out here because they had boarding at that time. Winchester had given up their boarding. And so she went there because she was a homebody. She didn't know we could not send her very far from home.
You mean the Mount Mercy?
Yeah, they had they had moved their boarding school out. She was there during the period of transition, you know, when the nuns stopped wearing habits, and it was an interesting period.
That was in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it was in Monroeville.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then Meredith went to Syracuse.
Her daughter went to?
Melanie went to Bradford, which was a junior college in Haverhill, Massachusetts, and then she graduated. That was just a two-year college. She graduated from Massachusetts College of Art.
Bradford, tell me, Massachusetts?
It's in Haverhill. H-A-V-E-R-H-I-L-L.
Okay. So how old are they now?
Well, Melanie keeps reminding me she's going to have her 40th birthday. She
says
it's a great event. I thought she ignored it, but she says, no, it's a great event.
Okay.
I'm glad she feels that way.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you get there? Okay, well, that's very good. Do they have children?
No, Meredith is my career girl, and Melanie has no children. I don't know if she will. She has remarried. She was divorced, and she's remarried.
And they both live...
Melanie lives in Mill Valley, California, and Meredith lives in Washington, D.C.
Mill Valley, California, and Meredith in D.C. Okay. And you get there quite a bit, I guess?
Yeah, I was in California 3 times last year. Didn't actually plan to be that often, but it was 3 times.
Well, that's good.
And Meredith gets home, and I get to Washington. In fact, I was just there. I was working on it. And I'm meeting her in New York on the 27th, 26th, 27th.
Oh, that's great. I'm just wondering, we should go back here to a little bit, since it's been 33 years, you said, in Ponce? I was 32 in Korea, so we're close. A little different than the big city.
Actually,
right?
I spent 40 years there because I just sold the house last March.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I was there in 1940 to 1991.
Did you see a change a lot while you were there, or do you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, small towns are dying.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. no matter what you do, and I worked very hard. I was head of the Planning Commission for a number of years, and we went through a rather ambitious urban renewal program, which built a very lovely city complex and got rid of a lot of blight. But that didn't really save the town any more than it saved downtowns that I see. I was in Lexington, Kentucky a month or so ago, and they have built a very beautiful downtown. It's absolutely deserted.
Really?
Tucson, Arizona built a very beautiful downtown. Of course, those towns lost to the malls.
Uh-huh.
Towns like Punxsutawney.
Is there a mall there?
No. Well, they're a little shopping center. No, uh-huh. they weren't killed by the mall. They are just killed by time, I think. They have declining, aging populations. And there's really nothing to sustain them.
It's very different. Were you active there, or you weren't active in organizations? So?
I was only active in civic organizations. I was very active in the... I was chairman of the Planning Commission. I was head of the Punxsutawney Area College Trust.
Mm-hmm.
I helped to
Did raise you have a synagogue there?
Yeah,
Punxsutawney?
A small one,
mm-hmm.
which is now, I believe that they are planning to sell it for an office building and build a little... chapel at the cemetery, which is the only place people go.
Oh, to build a little synagogue? Okay.
No, it'll be a chapel.
It's a chapel. I know there is a cemetery, a Jewish cemetery,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Is your husband very good?
Yes.
Family.
Uh-huh.
I know.
You're looking at my
fish. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking at the tank.
Oh, I thought you were looking at the goldfish.
No, I see him. What's he made of?
He's made of silver in the fishers.
Silver Peter, didn't
you?
No, it's are there other Jewish families there now?
Very few now.
The Peets
and they're intermarried, although Les Shirley and Lester are not.